Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Rover's Return podcast. I'm Paul Worthington, and as always, delighted to be joined by my co-host, Simon Burns. We are back after a bit of a break recording the podcast, and this time we've got something a bit different. So, previously, we've done a look back at specific periods for Rovers, but now we're going to go do an even deeper dive and look at some of the familiar names and faces during the periods that we've covered and the previous two seasons of the podcast. Starting with our second spell in the Premier League from 2001 to 2012. We'll look at some of the key players and ask why were they signed, the impact or lack thereof they had, the best and worst moments, and what happened to them post Rovers. So up first, we have Andy Cole, a personal favourite of mine. So let's jump straight in, and good to be back, Simon. If I say
Yes,
to
of
you,
course.
Andrew Cole, I should have said, what's your first Rovers moment or best Rovers moment?
It's got to be the goal he scored against Liverpool, I believe, in his first full season with Rovers. So that would be 2002-03. And I mean, it's an absolutely sublime strike. I think he kind of takes it on his chest and then kind of launches it, and just kind of. It's absolutely extraordinary, and I think really reflective of the ability that he had to kind of strike a ball with such kind of purity. But I do remember being quite annoyed with that game in the round because I believe Liverpool were on a terrible run of form at that time and were really kind of just notching up defeat after defeat, or at least not kind of winning games. So I was seeing Blackburn go to Anfield with a real expectation that we would win. And even though it was a great moment from Andy Cole, I still kind of come away disappointed that we didn't beat Liverpool at Anfield, which never happens to Rovers. So, yeah, a kind of a mixed series of emotions. But yeah, there's no denying that it was an absolutely outstanding strike from Andy Cole. I'm not going to call him Andrew. It's Andy Cole.
Okay, well,
What about you? What sticks in the memory?
it's difficult. I mean, I don't want to go for the obvious one, which obviously would be the Worthington Cup final. I think actually, when I actually think of Cole being at Rovers, my kind of first overarching memory is just, I would say, it's the vibe of him being there.
Nice.
And I just feel that like he had an aura of like, this is a player who is kind of like a top class professional
He means
footballer.
business.
He means business. He knows how to play. And he just seemed like there was a certain aspect of his game that just seemed a level above some of the other players, but also his expectations of them. And I really liked that. Even though I think sometimes on the pitch, maybe it came across in a demeanor wise kind
He looked
of.
like he hated
Yeah, a little bit, but then
it.
subsequently he's talked about how much he enjoyed his time at Rovers, and I don't think it's a bad thing that someone just wanted to see kind of like or expect high levels of performance from his colleagues. So yeah, watching it as a fan, I kind of felt like, wow, yeah, this guy really wants the team to be as good as he is, and this guy's won the treble, which at that time
Really,
was
really
unbelievable.
recently as
Yeah,
well.
really, like under 2 years ago. So for me, I kind of like thought it was just like a really just important dynamic he had. And yeah, when I think of him, I just think of that like aura of like, wow, we've got Andrew Cole in our team.
He's kicking us on to another level by virtue of
Exactly.
that kind of attitude and professionalism that he had.
Yeah. Well, but that's a good segue. So let's get into like why we signed him and how we ended up there. So looking back at some of the press coverage pre and post signing, I thought it was really interesting reading Graeme Souness's comments. So we signed him like just end of December, just lost two games back to back at home, Sunderland and Derby. They were both terrible, terrible games. I remember both of them, unfortunately. We didn't score a single goal in either of them. And I love this from Souness. It's a classic Souness comment. If we can make this happen, and I would love to make it happen, it would be a monster transfer for us. Describing any transfer as a monster is, that is absolutely just fantastic. I don't think it's a word used enough. And I think he really gets to the heart of the kind of question here. So he goes on to say, if we could get him here, it would be tremendous. He would be a tremendous asset for us. We do create a lot of chances. and we have not been taking anywhere near the percentage of opportunities that have come our way. So look at that. Souness is already dealing in like Opta percentage, goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Goal
ahead of his time.
Ahead of his time. And I think so that kind of sets the context. We weren't scoring enough goal. We can obviously recognize the role that Grabby played in that, the huge summer signing that didn't really work out. Because let's be honest, if Grabby had worked out, would they have signed Cole? Probably not.
Yeah, of course not. No.
So you're throwing another 8 million on top of 7 million you spent on Grabby to kind of find that one striker to secure goals. And the final thing I'll say before I kind of hand over to you to the kind of like the context point, and I hadn't realized this, is that so Souness also goes on to say he is someone we tried to get before he became available, which says to me they did try and sign him in the summer when they got promoted. And that must have been, he must have been a primary choice over
Grabby. That's audacious though. A newly promoted team trying to sign Andy Cole just 12 months after he's won the treble.
I love that though.
That's never going to happen.
But it's interesting. It clearly shows you that A, Grabby was not the first choice, and B, what an interesting kind of what if, you know, they'd saved the 7 million on Grabby, just gone straight to Cole, probably had to pay a little bit more of a premium for him, maybe 10 million in the summer. And then you'd be saving some extra money you can invest elsewhere. Anyway, I thought that was really interesting.
Always thinking about the what ifs.
Yeah.
I mean, so, speaking of the finances, like 45k a week deal he was on.
In 2001,
you know, with inflation, what's that like 100 grand a week now or something like that? But,
I'd be shocked if there was any player close to that at Rovers today in 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I found it interesting in the context of researching for this podcast as well. I think one of Souness's other quotes was that he said that they were looking at Robbie Fowler as well.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, that really like big plans for Blackburn Rovers, like newly kind of arriving back in the Premier League. Targeting Robbie Fowler, not the Robbie Fowler we got subsequently.
What was that?
8 years later, when he was clearly kind of, you know, not in peak physical condition. These were going for these kind of strikers when they were still very much near the peak of their powers was, I think, really reflective of the ambition that the club clearly had at that time. And I really get what you mean about the kind of the vibes in terms of that professionalism. And I think that was reflected in, like, when he signed. I just remember being so just excited. Like, wow, that is a real statement of intent, a real statement signing to get someone like that of that kind of caliber. I think it's interesting as well, considering the players that we had at that time. I think, you know, we spent an entire season talking about a season of this podcast, that is, talking about how good those players were and the quality that they had. And evidently they went on to achieve really, really great things. But the fact of the matter is, the season up until that point had been a bit of a struggle, particularly over that kind of Christmas period and into the new year. It was really starting to kind of go pear-shaped. And I think maybe it's reading a little bit too much into it, this, but the Cole effects, not just in terms of the number of goals that he scored, he was prolific in that first season for us, that first half season, that is. But you just get the sense of someone like this coming into the dressing room, a treble winner, really kind of serious demeanor, correcting people when they say, "It's great to have you, Andy," and he says, "It's Andrew." like these young players like Duff, Dunn, really, you can imagine them looking at him, and it's like, wow, we have ability, but we need kind of to be consistently delivering this. So I think for that reason, it's he's well worth his inclusion here for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And I think you're right. Like we obviously had a very talented team that year and subsequent years, but the experience and gravitas he brought, in a different way, obviously people like Henning Berg and Friedel, but like Cole has had it in a different level, right?
But that recent kind of cachet as well. And it's different to have like a striker as well, who's so potent. like Friedel was obviously an outstanding goalkeeper. Henningberg had kind of achieved great things, but to have someone at the top of the pitch really being able to kind of score the kind of goals that he did. I mean, he scored some very scrappy goals. I think it's, he didn't only score great goals. He did score some great goals, but he also scored some which like just kind of bobbled in. But
let's talk about that for a few minutes. It's an interesting topic. So a shout out here for a moment to our friends over at the brfcs.com website, who've handily posted a video of all Andrew Cole's goals for Blackburn. So I will attempt to try and put that link in the show notes. So if anyone wants to go and look at it after, they can. It's well worth 7 minutes of your time. And yeah, it's really striking, like going through watching all the goals. And so just to kind of put listeners in context here. So Cole scored 37 goals in 100 games. And particularly in that first season, the first half season, he scored 13 in 20. So really kind of hit the ground running. And yeah, there's a real mix of goals, isn't there? Like, I forgot how good he was in the air, heading the ball. You're right, he did score some scrappy goals, but he also had some of the goals you see, like his movement was just really
his
next
anticipation.
Level. His anticipation, but he's also kind of like the way he kind of like clearly had a good connection with certain players in particular. I mean, he had a couple of goals. I mean, my all-time favorite Andy Cole goal, actually, is his goal against Fulham. Fulham away towards the end of the 2003-04 season. I think it was a 4-3 game when Tugai, outside of the boot, on the halfway line on left channel, kind of sends it across diagonally to Cole, who kind of like chests it down and just thumps it in. Like, that is just an incredible goal on all accounts. And there was also a couple of moments in a League Cup game that I'd completely forgotten against Wigan, where he has two really good goals, where first thing it's Tugai, and then second, David Thompson, both play him in behind the lines. Just re-watching that just made me remember, oh, wow, how good he was at that, to your point, the anticipation, making those runs, understanding where the space was between the defenders. So, yeah, but then also to your point, like the goals where he's like, he's in the 6-yard box and it's just scruffy and he gets it in.
Yeah. I think the goal he scored away at Spurs in that kind of 4-0 demolition, where it's almost like Duff is just like clearly on another level by that point, and he's just kind of bombing down the wing and then kind of pulls it back, and like Andy Cole's almost like falling over, but it still kind of like hits him and goes in, and you're like, fair enough, like they all count, and he can kind of mix it with the best of them in terms of like just getting into the right positions at the right time. To put the ball away. But I mean, it is interesting though, isn't it? Because we had the number of goals he scored. What does that say about his time? Because I think most Blackburn Rovers players, most Blackburn Rovers fans, when they think of Andy Cole, would have kind of a positive impression of his time. But the actual 37 goals in 100 appearances is a good return on a fairly sizable £8 million investment. But in terms of the league, after that first season or that first half season, his numbers do drop off a little bit. What do you make of that in terms of like, clearly the numbers don't tell the whole story, but do you, and I guess it makes me think as well about the kind of the slur that like Glenn Hoddle kind of made of him as well, that he needs 5 chances to score a goal. Do you think, having seen him at Blackburn Rovers, you have enough evidence to say that that's outrageous, or do you think that kind of comment is actually vindicated and justified by his time, his performance, and the numbers that he stacked up while playing for Blackburn?
I don't think the Hoddle comment is justified when you look at his career in total and you look at his goals scored, right? Because if you extrapolate those numbers out in terms of, you know, his total career goals and then times that by 5 in terms of number of chances, unless he was
is
like...
Is it not possible, considering the service that he was getting from Tugai, Duff, Dunn, Thompson?
So, I mean, I'll say this. I was a little bit surprised looking at the details of particularly the second season, the 2002-03 season, which is kind of like pinnacle peak soonest Rovers in the Premier League, right? We finished 6th in the league. We have Duff playing out of his mind. And he only scored 7 goals in 34 league games, and he scored 13 in 43 overall for a team that finished 6th and had a really, really just a well put together side all over the pitch, but in particular going forward. Those numbers, in hindsight, looking back, do surprise me a little bit, particularly given he scored 13 goals in 20 games and in half a season. So there was definitely a drop off in the number of goals scored.
Is that because York arrived? And Ochsenstad was kind of still like chipping in here and there.
Chipping in is a very kind description.
I think that as well. You know, there were.
So, because by this point, obviously, Matt Janssen is no longer in the picture. So York has come in, and I don't think York scored more than 10. I mean, he feels like a 9-goal kind of season kind of guy. I think it comes back to my earlier point about his vibe, and there's just something about when you're sending a team out in 2002-03, and you know you've got a midfield of kind of like Duff, Dunn, Two Guy, Flitcroft.
It was always goals in the midfield, wasn't there?
And then you look at your strike force, it's like York and Cole. It's like, yeah, okay, it's not York and Cole of kind of like 98-99, but again, if you look at some of the highlights and some of the interplay and some of the goals they kind of create for each other, there's clearly a spark there still.
Yeah.
So even what I don't have in front of me, I wish I did, is actually a number of assists as well. But again, it's also chances created. So yes, I would have liked to have seen more goals, but I think his overall contribution was just kind of additive to the team.
Yeah.
I think even more so in 03-04 when it was a struggling side, because when he scores, he scored 11 goals in 34 games in 03-04 for a team that was struggling. And if he took those goals out of it, we probably went down. So,
and again, you almost think that professionalism, that kind of diligence would have been so important in a relegation season. A relegation threatened season, at the very least. I think the team was really firing on all cylinders the season before, and kind of everything, a lot of things were kind of just going right. But then, obviously, we lost kind of a couple of key players, and it really was so much more of a struggle in 03-04. And like you say, that kind of goal he scored against Fulham was really kind of reflective, I think, of the contribution he made. A fantastic goal and a really important goal as well. So I think, it was almost like a devil's advocate kind of question, because I think he was a fantastic kind of asset for the club across kind of 2-3 kind of seasons. But it was just something that was somewhat striking to me. I always thought, especially when you look at the likes of McCarthy and Santa Cruz a little bit later on, who have better numbers, at least in terms of goals scored. But I don't know. Is it maybe it's something that we'll unpack in the context of kind of deep diving into these different players? But you didn't get that sense. I don't know. I didn't get that same sense of the vibes of that seriousness and diligence coming from McCarthy and Santa Cruz, just because I didn't really know them, and they didn't have that proven track record in the Premier League. It's different. You're signing someone from Man United, and he's coming to Blackburn and a newly promoted side. That's such an important effect that he had in terms of like almost settling the nerves a little bit, as was evidently the case considering the upturn in form after he arrived in that first season back in the Premier League.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And 8 million, like we're talking over 20 years ago, right, as a transfer fee. So it's an outrageous
a lot of money. Still our transfer record, isn't it?
It probably will be. I mean, I think
we matched it with Jordan Rhodes.
Yeah, the problem with Rovers is a lot of the transfers are undisclosed. You never actually know what the amount is. But I mean, I'm always going to say that it was Cole over Jordan Rhodes, just because it sounds better.
Absolutely.
You mentioned an interesting point about like the turn in terms of the 2003-2004. It's a relegation battle. It's definitely a different kind of vibe as a team where we are. We've lost Duff. We've lost Dunn. You know, tried to bring in some replacements. It hasn't really worked in terms of kind of, you know, refreshing and revamping the squad. And then obviously, you know, we kind of looked at this in terms of the research for the show. Kind of looks like the dynamic and relationship between Cole and Souness seems to kind of I was gonna say fall really down, but breakdown feels, you know, I don't doesn't feel like an over-exaggeration. So yeah, what do you think happened there?
Well, who knows what obviously happened behind the scenes. I think there's news reports of kind of a bust up in training between him and him being Andy Cole and the manager. And there's a news article where kind of John Williams, the then CEO, talks about them having a cup of tea and kind of patching things up and it all being fine. But clearly that was a sign of things to come in terms of the deterioration of their relationship. And I guess you can't look past the fact that this wasn't an isolated incident. You look at it, this happened more than once in the context of the Cole Souness relationship. But I mean, Souness famously fell out with Dunn as well, didn't he? And that kind of precipitated his move to Birmingham. So, and there's been some pretty strong words from Andy Cole since about kind of labelling Graham Souness kind of old-fashioned and a bully, even, which is, you know, a very, very kind of strong word to use when speaking about a former manager. So it appears that there really was a breakdown to such an extent that, yeah, I think we were both kind of barely kind of gobsmacked when we kind of came across this, because I certainly hadn't remembered it that Andy Cole had even lodged an official complaint with the PFA about Graham Souness' behaviour, which is absolutely extraordinary considering that it's still within the season.
And he's still playing for the team. When I came across that when I was researching, I actually thought it was like a fake news article.
Yeah.
I had to find fake two news sources. I had to find two news sources just to verify that what he actually reported him to the PFA in season.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because it wasn't, again, this is a long time ago, but it isn't the kind of the main memory of whole wrapping of his time at Blackburn Rovers, in the same way that for me it very much is for Dunn in that first kind of stint. Yes. It's like he fell out with Graham Souness. I remember interviews with Souness on the Premiership on ITV at the time, saying like, "Oh, I got a hello out of David this morning, so I guess that's progress." Like, this isn't really a great reflection on the state of your relationship, but yeah, that didn't come across, at least in terms of my memory banks when reflecting on the Andy Cole situation. I just thought that, well, maybe he was just kind of coming to the end of his time, and it was a natural kind of parting of the ways. So it was quite a surprise to read about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You had the same, like, I had the same kind of impression going into researching this as well. Like, I knew Souness and York had bad bust ups, yeah. And that kind of stemmed from like Souness taking him out in training. What I'd less remembered, was this kind of relationship breakdown between Souness and Cole to the extent it did. And I think it's worth just kind of like bringing it to light a little bit with some of Cole's own comments here that he's given to another football podcast. So he said, "My issue with Graham was back then, Graham was a bully. And I was basically saying to Graham, it doesn't work like that. I have grown up different. Bullying doesn't work." And when
interesting that he's saying that coming from Manchester United.
Having
been kind of trained by Alex Ferguson.
I mean, but also you mentioned Dunn just a moment ago. So there's Dunn, there's York, there's Cole, there's a bit of a pattern here, and they all seem to point to one direction, i.e. the manager.
Yeah. I guess this isn't really the time to really kind of like critically reevaluate Graham Souness' time, but he had a very, very good squad.
He did.
So I don't know.
This podcast is about Cole.
We can relitigate that.
We can do that another time. But and I think the other extension of this kind of like re-remembering the kind of exit towards the end was that I just, in my memory, it was like Cole's contract ran out. It was very amicable. He decided to move on. I was like, no, he still had a year of his contract to go, and they agreed to let him go to Fulham. I'd completely forgotten that he still had a year to run, because the consequence of that was that we let Cole go and we signed Paul Dickoff as his replacement.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, talk about a step backwards.
Well, because he left at the end of 03-04, and that was where we just survived. And then the next season, it's when Souness leaves, what, after about six or seven games or something like that, goes to Newcastle. Yeah. And then that's another season of really kind of backs against the wall survival. So that would, wow, Dickov would have been leading the lines. I've got a lot of time for Paul Dickov, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Is, but, you know, in terms of what we were saying.
Not as potent as Andy Cole. And you'd imagine it would have been interesting to see how Andy Cole would have performed under Mark Hughes. Considering they played together as well at Blackburn, so I don't know if that would have been a positive kind of dynamic to try and just from a personal and interpersonal perspective, not to kind of like play again, obviously. But yeah, it's a bit of a shame because he still had goals in the tank, didn't he? Considering
he did
where he went to, he then began a bit of a journeyman career after leaving Blackburn, but he was still racking up very respectable Premier League kind of tallies in line with what he was delivering at Blackburn. So it wasn't like he was going massively off the boil or anything.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really good point because I think he scored like 11 or 12 goals for Fulham in his single season there. So, you know, he clearly still had that ability. So he scored more Premier League goals that season than he had, I think, in the previous two for Rovers, not combined in an individual basis. To your point, if we kept him around and Hughes had become manager, yeah, there's probably a chance he could have still been quite a positive contributing force to the team. But yeah, after Rovers, he does. I mean, even when he goes to City, he's not that bad. He scores still a number of goals, and then it kind of tails off. I mean, he scores a few goals for Burnley, but I'm not really bothered.
He has
about
a
that.
Good record for Burnley. I mean, six goals in 13 appearances, admittedly in the Championship, but.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
It's not too bad at all. I mean, then 11 appearances and zero goals for Forest in 08-09 is probably spelling the end.
But I think it's from Nottingham, so maybe that was kind of nice thing for him to do.
Oh, that's interesting. Interesting. But
So just as we start thinking about kind of like wrapping up the show, I mean, I wanted to kind of like highlight one point actually to this idea that like him leaving or staying, because again, to quote Cole in his own words, he's like, reflecting on his time at Rovers, and this is an article actually in the rovers.co.uk website in 2019. I really enjoyed it, and the only reason I left was because I couldn't get on with the manager. It was as simple as that. I think it's quite interesting that the Rovers website is quite happy to kind of just put that on the official website.
The 25-year-old or something like that, with like government papers or something like that.
Yeah, so
sufficiently long afterwards.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm really personally as a fan, I'm really happy to hear that he did enjoy his time, and maybe there was a scenario where he could have stayed longer. And then on the Man United website, he also said something else. He said, "I can say now I should have stayed at United to see out my career, but on the flip side, I've gone away and end up winning the trophy I didn't win." United, the League Cup. Yeah. So he ends his career with a full domestic set of honours. You know, it's not something many players can say they've done. And yeah, I obviously feels like there's a little bit of regret there. But what would he have won at United?
Tough for him, isn't
more
it?
More Premier Leagues.
But I guess it's like because he was really trying to get into the England setup, wasn't he? That was something that hadn't really and ultimately never would be a kind of major part of his playing career, kind of international kind of caps or honours or goals. I think it reflects quite well on him, the fact that he was still clearly like a very, very capable striker who probably could have done a very credible job for Man United as a squad player. But he was like, I don't want to be a squad player. I don't want to sit on the bench while Nistelrooy is starting. I'm only 30. I want to keep playing. I want to kind of keep myself in the England frame. So I'm going to go to another side that's going to enable me to do that. So I think, and maybe that's kind of taking this full circle, I think that actually reflective of that quite mature attitude, that professionalism. It's like, no, I want to achieve things in my career. I've still got something to give and something to contribute. So I want to kind of go and test myself perhaps in a new environment. So maybe that is just kind of capturing him in a way that's actually quite accurate and quite positive, actually.
So I think that's a really, really good kind of point and sentiment to kind of end on, because you're absolutely right. And I think it comes back to my first point about the vibe. Like, he didn't come across as someone who was just collecting a paycheck. He
No,
really, like,
no.
professionalism, like effort, they really mattered. And, you know, if you think about some of today's players, and he's not the kind of player who would have gone to Saudi Arabia and just kind of like accepted 600, 700,000 pounds a week just to kind of like play in that league. Like, he was clearly.
No, you don't get
he
that
had hunger.
Impression.
He had hunger. And I really respect that. For someone who'd won everything and still loved it as much as that, you just have to respect that. It's I wish more. I think we all wish all players were like that, and they're not. Because they're human
absolutely.
beings, they have different priorities. But he really loves.
I'm sure
he really loves scoring goals.
I'm sure we'll cover kind of players, I'm sure, in the context of this season who didn't quite have the same levels of kind of commitment and professionalism as Andy Cole.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think on that note, we'll leave it there. Unless you've got any final remarks. Oh, also, kudos to us. We've managed to do an entire episode of Andrew Cole at Blackburn Rovers without really talking about the Worthington Cup final. It's world common ground. You all know it. It was great. We don't need to talk about it. We're here to get into the more minutiae and kind of more.
Exactly. I think that's in keeping with our general approach. I'm sure there's been episodes previously where we've essentially kind of sidestepped some of the major talking points of a particular season, but I would like to think that's not why people come
exactly.
To this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't know what happened at the Worthington Cup final in 2002, then you know you should already know that. So we're not going
to absolutely.
All right, Simon. Well, I've really enjoyed this new kind of style of player profile. So we're going to continue it next time. Don't know who's next, but look out for the next episode, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.